The flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Now, if I may have a motion to approve our minutes from November 16th, subject any amendment?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And our financial report.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I'll wait till they queue up the PowerPoint for this month's financial report.
Just make sure you cover safety for us as well.
The PowerPoint is to supplement the information that was sent out through the first 11 months or the 11 months of this fiscal year. In a nutshell, we're doing well. We're online with our budget, actually ahead of it in a number of cases. I did want to highlight a few items for you. The first would be, you can see property tax, $19 million over what we had last year at this point. It's about 24%. That's all a result of the levy. Right below that, you'll see local government grants and gifts, $12.75 million above what we were at this point last year. Just great work on the part of development. Well, I'm sorry, I advanced. Go back a slide. Great work on the part of the development staff. It's a product of grants as well as gifts. A big grant that we're all well aware of is the Mendel grant that would be included in there. To date, and this is organizationally, revenues year to date are 30% over where they were last year at this point. Expenses are 13.3%. So that's a recipe for success. When your revenues are growing at 30%, expenses only growing at 13%, that's a recipe for success. Some of the individual highlights, I just wanted to point out the zoo. And we mentioned this last month. You'll see the Zoo Society last year in November, we received $573,000. This month, we received nothing because we received their check last month. And I mentioned it's a timing situation. When you look at the year to date, they almost exactly line up at the top. Our general admissions are up 1.2% over last year. So running slightly ahead, when you look at the zoo operations overall, they're doing well. They're doing about right in line with where they were, about 4% ahead of last year. Expenses running slightly ahead of that, about 6%, 6.5% of last year. But all in all, the zoo is having a good year. We've talked about this in previous meetings, the $8 million that we spent in construction expense, primarily the bear exhibit, constitutes a big chunk of that spend this year. We go to golf. First, you'll note that we're up $780,000 in greens fees. That's 14.7%. That's all a product of the rounds played. Rounds played this year are up dramatically over last year. I did want to point out the driving range, 51% over last year. If you just look at year-to-date revenues, the driving range is doing great. When you look at the $21,000 for the driving range for November, compared to last month, if you had last month's report, it was 42,000. It just shows the season is slowing down. Still ahead of where we were in November of 2022, but we're slowing down.
Why? What happened at the driving range that drove it up so high?
I just think it's interest in play. I mean, just more and more people are showing up. We've also changed the way you, instead of using the tokens, you can use a credit card, which makes it a lot quicker. But when I've gone over to Washington, there's a waiting line. I'm not a waiting line, but people are behind each other to get out and play. Mm-hmm. And to just, it's just an increase in play, which I think is also manifested up here. Not only are they using the driving range, but they're playing golf. They're up there. It's just interest in golf boom during COVID, and it's held. We don't know if that'll continue forever or if it'll peak at some point, but right now it's going very, very well. Total revenues in golf are up 19.6%. Expenses year to date through 11 months, 14.8. So again, recipe for success. They're almost $900,000 ahead of where they were last year. And then I did want to highlight, we had a lot of construction expense in this current month. That was all the continued work at Manikiki, which we've talked about and you're familiar with. The one golf course to highlight would be Sleepy Hollow. It's almost 50% ahead of where it was in 2022. It's actually 49.8%. So I guess that's being exact. An accountant can say you're 50% of where you were last year. Rounds played are up dramatically. all of our courses are doing well. We're pleased with everyone's performance, but if you had to point out which one is doing the best overall, it'd be Sleepy Hollow.
So, there we go.
And then Enterprise, I did want to point out that we're up 33% in concessions. The big driver there, and we're going to see it on the next slide, is Merwin's. Merwin's, of the 3.3 million, 3.36 million year-to-date in concessions, 2.36 million of that is at Merwin's. So that's up 33% in concessions. You can see what happens then to revenue. Revenue's up 18.3% year-to-date. Expenses are up 15.2%, again, 18.3, 15.2. Again, I use this term often. That's a recipe for success if we can continue that. There we go. And then we've mentioned this a few times. Merwin's continues to perform well year to date. It's showing a surplus of $170,000. Again, as I looked at all of our individual enterprise operations, we're pleased with where all of them are. But I did want to raise that up because you can see the dramatic difference of where it was last year at this point and where it is this year at this point. And it's all driven by the top line. You can just see how operating revenues concessions have gone up dramatically.
We attribute that to anything particular?
I just think just overall the volume has gone up dramatically. I don't think there's one individual thing. I think it's just they're doing lots of things well there. Lots of things well.
But the good part of that is that would not have been built if we hadn't built it. And there would not be a restaurant there if we hadn't done it.
That's correct.
So that really added a lot.
That is correct. And then the last thing I wanted to point out is when we look at our nature shops, you can see that from the top line, retail sales are up 31%. Expenses are up 17%. So even though there's still a slight subsidy this year, they're continuing to grow sales at the retail shops. As we improve on how we sell more online, product choice, staffing, they just continue to do well. And the anticipation is that next year this will not be this will not look like that. This will be a positive number at this point. And so I just wanted to point out that from the retail end, the retail shops are continuing to do well. Overall, through 11 months, we're doing very well. We're right in line with where we'd hoped to be. And as we go into looking at next year's budget, we're in a really good financial spot right now. I don't know if there are any questions on the material that was sent out.
We good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Wade. Yeah, good morning, everyone. New business. This morning, we are going to swear in two new patrol officers. Well, one brand new and one coming back to us in a part-time capacity. So if Chief could please come forward. Bruce, if you can administer the oath to Isaiah Hayworth and Brandon Tolliver, please.
Want to make some intros?
Sure. Good morning, everybody. Another great day for the Cleveland Metro Parks Police Department as we are swearing in two brand new officers, actually one brand new and one kind of recycled, but Isaiah Hayworth, Isaiah comes to us from the Cleveland Police Department, number of years of experience joining our organization. Very excited to have Isaiah with us. And Brandon Tolliver, Brandon has 7 years experience, left this year to take an assistant principal to Magnet School in Cleveland, and then is now coming back to us on a part-time basis. So can't thank you enough for coming back and helping us out. So you both gentlemen step up and we'll be all set.
Get your scripts. Raise your right hand, repeat after me. I state your name.
I,
Brandon Tolliver, do solemnly swear,
that
I will support the Constitution, the laws of the United States of America,
and laws of the United States of America,
the Constitution and laws of the state of Ohio,
the Constitution and laws of the state of Ohio,
and the rules and regulations of Cleveland Metro Parks,
and the rules and regulations of Cleveland Metro Parks,
and I will discharge the duties to the best of my ability, of the office of patrol officer, to which I've been appointed, and I will faithfully carry out and implement
The
policies enunciated
The policy enunciated.
And the instructions given to me.
And the instructions given to me.
By the Board of Park Commissioners.
By the Board of Park Commissioners.
The Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
This I promise to do as I shall answer unto God.
This I promise to do as I shall answer unto God.
Excellent. Thank you, sir.
While the two of them are signing, Isaiah completed his peace officer basic training at the Cleveland Police Academy, where he'd been a member of the department since 2017. He also did serve in the National Guard. He was deployed in Afghanistan in 2014. Brandon Tolliver was with the Cleveland Metro Parks in 2016 and now is returning to continue his service with Cleveland Metro Parks. The recommended action falls on the mid portion of page 9, appointing Isaiah Hayworth as a full-time police officer and Brandon Tolliver as a part-time police officer. Recommended action again is in the middle of page 9.
Motion. Do we have a motion?
Motion.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
The next action item we have is the 2023 budget adjustment number 12.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, you'll find budget adjustment number 12 on page 10. It's in the amount of $4,385,007. I did want to point out, since it's over $4 million, that two of the adjustments are for $2 million. One is for $2 million to increase the appropriation for Old Highland Bridge replacement. And that's because we received a grant for $2 million from the Ohio Department of Transportation. The other is a $2 million increase in appropriation in contracts for the CHERS project. And that is because we received a new foundation grant. So both were new revenue sources that we had to increase the appropriation to cover. So that's $4 million of the $4.385 million.
Motion.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
I'm sure you'd like to hear more about budget matters, but if you want to take a few minutes to leave, you're welcome to stay, but you don't have to stick around. All right.
Okay. Yeah.
Good. Sure. Okay. There we go.
The next action item we have is the 2024 appropriations budget. Wade.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, you'll find the 2024 appropriations budget on page 11. It totals $177,993,162. You can see the breakout there on the baseline budget, as well as the estimated amount of carryover encumbrances. And it says estimated because we are still running the park district through the end of the year, and that may change slightly, but not materially. I would ask your approval of those appropriations for 2024.
Any questions?
Do we have a motion?
Yeah.
Do we have any questions?
Do you have any questions?
No. Go ahead.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next action item we have is the authorization revision to the change fund and petty cash. Wade, I'll just handle this. This is just something that we do periodically throughout the year just to rebalance the portfolio of different employees as they come and go, or areas open and closed throughout the year. So it is just a rebalancing of the petty cash fund. Recommended action continues itself all the way down through page 16 to revise the petty cash.
Kind of curious what's going on at Wallace Lake.
Well, Wallace Lake is under construction, and so that's what's.
Got it. Thank you.
We have a motion.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the ratification of the collective bargaining agreement with the Fraternal Order of Police, Ohio Labor Council Officer Unit. This is a very successful end result of the negotiations that we've gone back and forth collectively. We are very happy to be able to bring this agreement forward from 24, 25, and through 26. The terms are very commensurate with what we have negotiated for our other bargaining units in the past year and a half. Recommended action falls in the top portion of page 17 to execute the three-year contract with the FOP officer unit.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the authorization of a land acquisition. This is the Duncan property. This is in Hinckley Reservation. This is a 2.8 acre piece of land. I'm assuming you're going to bring it up. This particular piece of property probably has been looked at for the entire history of the Cleveland Metro Park's existence in the Hinckley Township area. We are very blessed to be doing a $10 million plus project that's related to the Hinckley Lake Dam rebuild, the Hinckley Lake dredging to mitigate flooding. As you can see on the map here, the significance of this property, this was the only private piece of property in totality around the entire lake. So it was an infill. And so we're very pleased to be able to bring this forward to close out the last remaining parcel of private property so that this particular area now has public access all the way through. It will probably dictate redesigning some of the trails and some of the other areas. The house may get turned into a retreat house for people to have meetings and other things. Mm. The views to the southern portion of the lake are absolutely dramatic. That will take some demo and some other things that will happen. But we are very pleased to be able to bring this fee simple acquisition for the 2.8 acre parcel of land in Hinckley Township.
Very nice.
Recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 17. And again, applauding the real estate team to be able to pull off a very complicated set of conversations and negotiations. One of the best years you'll see from a land acquisition standpoint. So kudos to them. Recommended action is the bottom portion of page 17.
I echo your comments on the real estate team. So with that, I move for approval.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
The next is the adoption of the 2024 bylaws. Rose?
Thank you, Brian. We are here in December to make some changes to the bylaws. Typically, we do this in January from year to year as we organize the board. But whenever there are some items that would be better to be in effect as of January 1 of the following year, we come to you in December. And so just to highlight a few of the changes that we are proposing to the board. In Articles 1 and 4, we've made some edits to provide better clarity to what we thought were some ambiguities in that language, with allowing the president to move if so necessary, especially if we have an absence of one of the commissioners. And then we've got, you know, two folks. That makes it a little easier. And then just clarifying who sets the actual compensation for each employee. It was understood it was the CEO, but we've made that explicit. So there's no question. And then primarily the changes are with respect to procurement. We've had a change in Ohio law that in the state budget bill, it allowed the threshold for the purchase of goods to be raised to $75,000 as opposed to the threshold to which triggers competitive bid from $50,000 to $75,000. So that change is reflected. What we also did, though, too, is especially as we're getting more sophisticated with the number of sponsorships and partnerships, we have better crafted the language which spoke to the concession slash management services. The concession is legacy language, and we've moved to a management model for the third parties who come onto our premises to manage certain enterprise operations for us. And also the management services nomenclature better reflects the model that is better describes what is occurring for us and how we're utilizing those third parties. So we have defined the management services, and we've also, again, clarified some language about when the competitive process is required. The old bylaws, the existing bylaws reference when a contract is valued at $100,000. We have better defined that to say when the net amount that Cleveland Metro Parks will receive is over $100,000, because that was ambiguous and caused us confusion about when we did have to engage. So again, better clarification in the language we believe we're proposing. And then finally, we have broken out that sponsorship and other revenue generating opportunity section. This gives us the guardrails to allow our creative teams within marketing and enterprise to know when we need to still use a competitive process, which impacts if there are goods being involved in this sponsorship opportunity. And so we've crafted language that keeps us in line with Ohio law, with the bylaw requirements, and this is a clear roadmap now, so our staff can follow it and know what the parameters are. And then we'll, Commissioner Itu brought to my attention that we do have one edit to make in the, we'll make that change in Article 5, Section 2, Paragraph B. We will reflect manager in that last sentence as well. So with that addition to the proposed changes, I would ask if you have any questions, and if not, we would seek approval of the board for these changes to the bylaws to become effective January 1st of 2024.
Questions? Good.
Thank you for that very clear explanation. With that, I move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next is change order number 4, contract 1637. This is the first T expansion at Washington Park Reservation. This is GMP number 2. We were able to continue to work with Turner Construction and the First T group. We were able to work with them to secure some additional funding, and this will be the replacement of the 17 existing exterior windows, an additional of some interior concrete work, and an outdoor patio area. This is just a nice continued partnership with the First T of Cleveland. Again, this is the expansion at Washington Park Reservation, the work that we were able to do with CMSD over a year ago, adding more office space and programmatic space. So again, this is just a change order to, because we were able to secure, they were able to secure more funds to replace the windows. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 19.
Brian, can I ask one question? And I should know this, but to what extent are we funding that? And to what extent is First T funding that whole project, not just what we've got on the table here?
That's a great question. Yeah, they're funding the capital construction costs for the redo. The partnership started many years ago with Dr. Evans and the work that Metro Parks did to build this First T golf course. They had shared space for many years in the Wolfstein, kind of the center there. Their programs have continued to grow. We looked at actually expanding the building, but there was about 130-year-old, Sean, 130? Oak tree that was very strategically placed, and therefore we did not want to disrupt that. Conversations ensued with Superintendent Gordon at the time. We were able to secure the rest of the campus as they were moving things to East Tech. So we were able to secure the one building. You'll see another action item for work that we're going to do in the old science building. We do help pay for the utilities as part of the growth of the game. So there is a relationship there, but they're funding, fully funding the capital stack for this renovation.
I thought that was true. Thank you.
Good. Recommended action is in the top portion of page 19.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The next is the Gordon Park Boat Launch Pan American Games improvements. In 2024, the United States will host for its very first time the Pan American Masters game. The Metro Parks has been partnering with local groups, in particular the Foundry, who has raised the necessary funds. This is essentially a davit crane that will help two-ton hoist to move floating docks, foundations, gangway improvements for this particular event that we will be helping co-host with our friends over at the Foundry. Cleveland Metro Parks will do the design, the construction, and the project will be collaboratively funded through the Foundry. Recommended action is the top portion of page 20 to get this improvement done before next year's games.
Motion.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The next is the 2024 operating agreement between Cleveland Metro Parks and the Cleveland Zoological Society. This has been a longstanding agreement that's been in place. There are no substantive changes for this particular year. They are having one of their best years. Sarah Krupe is here, the executive director of the Cleveland Zoological Society. They've done a fantastic job helping raise funds, secure funds for Susie's Bear Hollow this past year, and then our campaign for the gorilla exhibits that will be moving forward. So we feel very comfortable bringing forward this agreement. Recommended action falls in the top portion of page 21 to continue the arrangement with the Cleveland Zoological Society.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The next is an authorization to submit a grant application through the ODNR Division of Forestry. Cleveland Metro Parks continues to find ways and opportunities. This is the Council on Environmental Qualities, Climate, and Economic Justice Screening Tool. We continue to look for areas that would include Dunham Park and Bedford Reservation. Gordon Park South has been identified as an area for some trees. Euclid Creek Reservation as well. So again, this is another grant opportunity. Our division planted over 2,350 trees and shrubs with over 12,000 tree seeds throughout the park district in 2023. They should be congratulated on continuing to reforest this area. We will request up to $500,000. The grant application is due very shortly, so the recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 21 to ask for funds through the ODNR grant process.
And 500,000 gets how many trees?
That I don't exactly know the quantity, but range. It depends on the caliper.
Sure,
so I think,
sure.
You know, one of the things we're looking at Dunham, a new entrance will be put in, bioswales will be put in, then we'll put some mounding in. We would like some larger trees, but they may set the caliper size.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot depends on availability and tree species. So I don't exactly have the
exact. No, I didn't think an exact. I was just curious, though, because 2,000 plus in 1 year is pretty darn good.
It's a good number. Yeah. Always best time to plant a tree is today. Or yesterday.
Just kind of curious, what was the maximum amount of the grant that could have been sought?
The maximum amount, I do not know what is the maximum amount, but that's this. It probably is 500,000. We will request up to. So that's my. We historically go up to that, the maximum number, but I can clarify that for you. This is also no matching funds. So
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great.
Motion.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is amendment contract number 1640, First Tee Expansion, Washington Park Reservation. As you had seen the work that the First Tee is doing, this particular area, we were able to lease the additional 9.062 acres. We are going to look at opportunities in what was deemed the former science building. It authorizes us to continue to increase the building area and program area, design services that are required to look at the ceiling tiles, the flooring, is there asbestos, all the wonderful things that an old building has. So we are looking at working through DS architecture for the professional services. Our team is very busy diligently working on Wallace Lake and a host of other projects. So to have a little bit of support from the outside to continue to look at the design services for this particular area with the enhancement, the over $2.5 million that they're doing, less than 100 yards away, this building will start to look its age as well. So we're figuring out how best to look at this in the future. The recommended action falls on the top portion of page 23.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item we have is the award of bids. There are a host of them, First Tee Expansion, information systems, technology equipment, paid media. We did notice that there are 11 new police cars. We did get behind about 2 years ago. And so we're playing a little bit of catch up with the chip issues that a lot of the manufacturers had.
Mm.
We had to wane just a little bit. So we're trying to move those up. We have a lot of cars that have a lot of miles on them covering the acres that we have. So we want to be able to bring that many cars forward to help flush out a number of other vehicles. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 24.
I had a quick question on the information systems staff augmentation. Are we on that action item? Is that part of this?
Yeah, you can talk about any of those in that grouping.
The recommendation is for up to 250 per year, but is the, are we approving up to 800 for a four-year period? Not quite sure what we're authorizing.
Anthony?
Yeah, so we did an RFP for staff augmentation. So it was a two-year term originally. And then, so it's not 800 for the additional years. That's the total spent since we've issued that RFP. So we're actually just additional, it's just asking for 250. And not that we actually utilize that amount, it's just authorizing that amount. So I think last year we spent less than 100, so.
Thank you.
Yep.
Brian, can I ask, this is a picky point, but the police cars, those are big engines and that's a lot of fuel. And I'm just curious, is that, are we a 7-liter engine for, you know, 10 police cars over 5-10 years is quite a bit of extra fuel. I'm just kind of curious. Obviously, that might just be a model. You take it or you leave it, right? Is that the way it?
Yeah, so the police package is set up, and the arrangement this time is with one of the dealerships that actually does most or part of the upfit through the state contract.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The vehicles are set up the way they are,
yeah.
To have the police certifications that are tied to them. You know, we've had Crown Victorias, which were not necessarily known to be the most fuel efficient. We've moved into the Dodge Chargers.
Okay.
We've now got F-150 trucks. We've got a few Explorers in the fleet as well. If you've seen most recently, the OSP has been running, you know, these as well from their police package. The amount of gear that our officers are taking with them, the incompatibility with some of the carriages in the back of those Dodge Chargers were really hard when you had to, you know, transport a prisoner. So these vehicles should allow for a lot of flexibility. But yes, they do have a little bit of a higher engine capacity. So.
Okay.
Rocket fuel.
Thanks. Yeah, right. No one will get away from our policeman, that's for sure.
Chief smiling, good.
Sorry. And one more question on the paid media advertising. We talked about this a bit. The estimate for 2024, and that's what we're approving today, right? The estimate for 2024 is like 70-80% higher than 2023. And that's connected with the sponsorship activity, et cetera. Can
yes.
you just talk about that a bit?
And Kelly can add a little bit more into that. Essentially, when we bring in other funds, then we're able to spend those dollars down. We've also been able to negotiate with all of our vendors, different ad buys. So we do that and kind of book our business at the start of the year. It doesn't mean we spend all of it, but it's essentially kind of the bookend of, it's like Anthony's start and finish of where we're actually at. But Kelly can add a little.
Yeah, and again, so that's approval to spend up to that amount. And to reiterate what Brian said, it's fully funded through corporate partnerships. So it's not coming from bottom line operating funds.
Thank you. Thanks for the explanation.
Good questions.
Yeah. Recommended action falls on the top portion, page 24.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor.
Aye. Aye.
Vouchers and payroll.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, resolution 23-12-190 is on page 43. I would ask approval of the vouchers and wire payments that are listed. They've all been reviewed as to their legality, and all the expenditures conform with the Ohio Revised Code. The total amount is $15,037,977.09.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Now we have public comments. Marty?
Martin.
Good morning. Good
morning. In the spirit of the holiday season, I suggest focusing on the least among you. Lots of love all year long for the well-heeled, highly connected downtown developer people. Funding the lakefront by depriving the less fortunate of social services is selfish. In fact, it will actually harm the city as a whole. Any TIF dollars Metro Parks may miss out on are balanced by trail grants. While depriving the needy to satisfy the rich is a modern day Christmas carol. Any happy ending is a generation away. Use your considerable influence to advocate for those who need help. Next, find room at the inn for the Euclid Beach Mobile Home Park folks. Step up and rethink the plans to allow a consolidated community to remain. A far-sighted suggestion was presented to showcase energy-efficient housing ideas. In a warming world, those would be powerful bragging rights and could help to balance out your energy extravagant holiday displays. One Euclid Beach resident was offered $6,000 for his home. What you're paying next week for Santa at Wild Wonder Lights per week. Metro Parks and others gather substantial sponsorships and donations. Beyond that, corporate profits travel up more than trickling down. Dollars flooding in for the barge should help Metro Parks to pay for maintenance costs, already becoming evident. Deterioration over time, which Commissioner Moore warned of. However, it seems petty to expect families to purchase adventure keys for what is touted as an important learning experience. 1,000 kids yields $2,000, a mere pittance to KeyBank or Metro Parks, but every little bit helps for many families with kids. Metro Parks leverages family, government, and corporate connections to raise funds for almost everything. In exchange, donors gain favorable publicity. Residents who most need assistance are pitted against your clout and resources and must rely on groups like Legal Aid and NAOCH, which themselves must compete for funds. You people can easily alter the Euclid Beach plans as Western Reserve Land Conservancy works at your behest. Former Metro Parks Commissioner Fred Rzepka will utilize parts of Hawthorne Valley Country Club for residential development, made even more profitable by Metro Parks' purchase of the course. Unlike the Euclid Beach folks, residents, he doesn't risk losing his home. Don't be Scrooge. Celebrate the season and donate a similar portion, allowing Euclid Beach to keep their homes and their communities. So share the joy, peace on earth, and goodwill to men and women.
My name is Len. I'm the Republican Party's Ward 8 city leader out there by Euclid Beach. And I noticed that what gets said in this room, it's a pretty big wave. It was like the complaints we had last time we were here at your last meeting was like almost taken care of immediately after we left. Thanks to you guys. And I guess the one thing that we all have in common in this room is we all love the Metro Parks and we don't want to leave it. But we got our packages for relocation. And I'm looking to stay in the area up by the lake, but the only real nice spots by the lake are what you guys control. And maybe I'll move over by Sims Park. So I'll be working in Euclid. I just wanted to let you guys know that, you know, that you're appreciated. We love the Metro Parks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, folks. My name is Kevin Cronin. And I live on East 67th Street by St. Clair. So it should surprise no one that I want to talk about Cheers and the project that you guys are working on there. The first comment I want to have is that I want to congratulate you because the second iteration of the Cheers project is much improved. It offers a lot more opportunity for Cleveland residents in my St. Clair neighborhood, and so I want to thank you for that. Nevertheless, it still falls short. It doesn't provide a wade-in-the-water experience for kids, and to my mind, if it does not do that, it's a wasted opportunity for a lakefront park. Kids on the east side in St. Clair and in Glenville deserve just as much water access as the kids in Edgewater. And so far right now, the Cheers project falls a bit short in my mind. And I want to encourage you to have all your clever and creative guys look at the project again to see if you can carve out a way to find a water access way for these kids. Now, related to that is there was a story in the paper this week that talked about the mayor approving a TIF for downtown projects. And the result of that TIF would be a 30-year extension that he's allowed to make, apparently. And what that means is that would deprive the city of revenue for other projects. And the paper went on to elaborate that the potential hit to the Metro Parks might be as high as $12 million. I want to know if that $12 million figure is accurate and what that would mean to the project like Cheers on the east side. Has the mayor created a downtown outside, you know, a clash between downtown and the rest of Cleveland? I think the city and the residents deserve to know that sort of thing. Cheers is already a 20-year project. I might be dead by the time that project gets completed. And does this now require it to be stretched out to 25, 30? Would this wade in the water experience that I'm encouraging you to consider be even pushed further out of reach? What does that TIF decision mean to the Metro Parks and the projects that Metro Parks is hosting? Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I
some discussion?
Just Wade, is that is it, does the TIF have that much hit for the Metro Park? Do you think? I didn't realize the numbers were that big.
When you're looking over a 30-year time span, that's why it's such a big number, because if you look at revenue that could be could have been earned over 30 years, it does multiply up.
Present value.
It's okay. It would just be downtown stuff.
The beneficiaries are the downtown business district. And that raised alarm bells in my mind as to what it would mean to the other projects that they that, for instance, Metro Parks is launching around the area.
You're welcome to talk to City Hall too.
Huh?
You're welcome to talk to City Hall too.
I'm sorry, Dave.
You're welcome to talk to City Hall.
I certainly would. Are you confirming? I mean, is that the actual potential?
We don't know the answer to that yet. We don't know the answer to that yet. Still asking to decide.
But it's certainly a risk.
Certainly.
Okay. Sorry, thank you.
I had one question, Sean. The wading, is that an area that, first of all, there's a lot of pollution there in that area, isn't there? Isn't there a combined sewer that comes out right near that area?
Well,
near the Cheers.
Water users either way. There are fishermen, you know, drawing fish out of the lake, and they'll consume that. So, I mean, that if there's a risk, then there's a risk to those people as well. There are boaters, there are kayakers, and people like that that are being encouraged. And they're going to be sitting on the water. So, if there's a water risk, it's widely posed to others who are potential users of this shared product.
Then, and the other thing is, it goes down, it falls off rather steeply, doesn't it, Sean?
Understand there's a geography problem, but again, you guys got clever people, and to my mind, if it doesn't have a way in the water experience, you're losing an entire generation of kids who will not know how to respect clean air and clean water. When I worked in social services in the Slavic Village neighborhood, I had a whole generation of kids who did not had never been to the lake, had never been on the waterfront, and that's a loss. And for residents of a city like Cleveland, sitting on a lake, which everybody prizes as one of our great treasures, so they should have that opportunity just as easily as the kids who are going to go over to the water park from the west side or something along those lines. This is a tremendous opportunity with Cheers, and I want to see you take advantage for the next generation.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sir.
If I could, for the record, so we have made some modifications to the Cheers plan, and thank you for recognizing the benefits that those bring. One of them is we've switched the orientation of the cove, so now that it is open only to the east and not the west, which will help with some of the concerns we had on pollution and debris as it drifts in the lake. With that, working with the sewer district and their plans to reduce the amount of incurrence of the combined sewer overflows, we're seeing nothing but an increase in terms of the water quality in the area. And then when it comes specifically to interaction with the water, that is one of the major drivers of Cheers. And although we do not have a swimming beach right now in the plan, part of it is due to geography in the cove, you will have the ability to touch the water, to launch a watercraft, be it a kayak, stand up, paddleboard. So there is that ability. What we're not doing is a swimming protected beach.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for your comments.
I think just to add, you know, this is something that, you know, the mayor has proposed. It is not, you know, necessarily solidified. I don't think you can necessarily say that one set of funds is going to transcend into another set of funds or take something away yet. You know, we operate on the 10-year cycle. We are very in tune to what the city's, you know, intentions are, at least from a high level. We're looking forward to having continued dialogue to understand the exact impact. You know, there are a number of grants in play. You know, a lot of the work that's done for CHEERS is through the federal funding mechanisms. And so we're looking forward to see if some of those funds could even be overlaid into that particular area. So a lot of this is kind of a stay tuned type of thing.
Thank you. Sir.
Good morning. First, I want to say I like that shape of the tie that Mr. Rinker has on. I don't have to get one of those when I grow up.
Be careful.
You know, when I got up this morning, it's really ice cold out there. I'm pretty sure everybody experienced that. And it's something that we got to get used to again. If you live in Northeast Ohio, you got to get used to the cold again. And with that in mind, I just hope that the Metro Parks are getting used to the people who live at Euclid Beach and some of the people. I appreciate Marty's words and other members of the community who's come forward and spoken positive words about us, because we're actually a really nice, diverse, and a nice group of people. You don't have to worry about some of the disturbances that the city of Cleveland and other municipalities have had for public comment here, because most of the time you're going to see a really nice, peaceful group of people who live at Euclid Beach. And with that in mind, we're having our Christmas party tonight at the Collierwood Rec Center, and you all are welcome to come. Please come, stop in. You get a chance to see regular, everyday people just enjoying. We're not going to be talking shop tonight. We're just going to enjoy. This may be our last Christmas. It's kind of sort of emotional, and we're still hoping, but we also understand the reality that this may be our last Christmas together. So anybody who wants to come, come stop in. And Collierwood Rec Center, 6 o'clock tonight. We're going to have something. You got to come to find out. We got some surprise. Surprise is coming. One of the things that I was reading about, because I've always spoken very positively about my experience with the Metro Parks, because I've done a lot of things at the Metro Parks, Euclid Creek, and various other places. And not only, and this was before I even moved next door 17 years ago, where the Metro Parks are connected to Euclid Beach. And I've been very interested in the various innovations of the Metro Parks, like the idea about the floating nature center, utilizing the barge as a floating nature center. That's a really good idea. It's very innovative and it's fun. And I look forward to experiencing that again, because I've actually went there before when it was Hornblower. So it'd be a different little twist. And I'm just saying that I'm hoping that we can continue in a positive partnership where members of Euclid Creek and the Metro Parks and any organization can partner together as we move forward going into 2024 to use these same innovations to come up with ideas and to. And I would like to extend to you guys, if you would like to look at our alternative plan, which has some rough number outlines where we partner with Jonathan Welly, with Cleveland Owns, to come up with a alternative plan to what's been proposed over at Euclid Beach in that North Collierwood area. And we understand fully that this is, you don't actually have possessed the land, and that we're not like barking out of a window. We understand that you don't have the land at this time in your possession right now, and we're very, and I'm reiterating what Lenny said, very grateful just for you having this forum where we can stand up and you can listen to us. And like Lenny said, it's some things that have been, what we spoke about, that has been implemented immediately and has been changes that we've seen. And we really appreciate that, really. We really seriously do. And we just, this is more about using the your influence to bring forth a positive outlook for many a number of people. And in this time of year, we're in this season, I don't know what faith people may follow or may not follow or whatever, but in this season, this is the season for using our influence for the better of society. And we just want to thank you and happy holidays and 6 o'clock at the Collinwood Rec Center if you want to come.
Good morning, my
board members.
Thank you so much, Marty. Thank you so much, Nanny. And thank you also, Anthony. On behalf of the Euclid Beach Mobile Park and all the residents there, myself, which is a resident also, I'd like to thank the, you board members for your influence on what has starting to happen and getting the ball rolling and getting the people that want to leave the metro, I mean, the mobile park, are getting moved out and they're pleased with where they're being placed at. So I'd like to thank each and every one of you for the words that you may have spoken. And they heard, Western Reserve heard and started to doing things and helping out the people at the park. But on the other hand, there are still some of us who wish not to leave that land. We moved there to die there, to spend the rest of our lives there, and we don't wish to leave. There's 28 acres of land that's going to be set in you guys' lap here in the very near future, and we just ask that you provide, if any way possible, to allow us to have 6 to 8 of those acres of that land so that we could continue to live there, live our lives out right there, and that's what I ask in behalf. And on that, I ask someone who's the vice, who's actual CEO, the owner of the Container Homes here in Cleveland, Ohio, who does a whole lot of development around the country. Yeah, can you step up one second, Chair?
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. My name is Derek Childs, and I'm not the CEO. My wife is the CEO, so I want to make sure we keep everything in order.
Right. You know, as guys, we're messing things up.
So my name is Derek Childs, and I'm the director of construction design for Container Homes USA. We are headquartered out of Cleveland here. We have a factory over on the east side, the Bessemer back area there. We have a factory, supersized factory over in Dubai, and we're opening one up in St. Thomas. And we do business all over the world. So this guy right here, I grew up with this dude. It's a William here. And they came to us one morning and asked me if I could talk with them. And the only time I really had available was about 7 o'clock in the morning, and they were there. So I said, okay, we might have something going on here. Let me see what this is all about. I don't know the whole parameter of the whole situation, and it really doesn't concern me. However, what I am here to speak on, we build shipping container homes, and we build affordable housing solutions out of shipping containers. So when you can do that, the problem that they're having right now, we can help rectify that situation. We're a local company. We're number one in America, and people don't even know. We're headquartered right out of Cleveland, Ohio. We won the Green Sustainable Builder of the Year in 2016. We won that award, and we decided to make Cleveland our home base headquarters. So with what they're looking for and the need and the price range and the different things that come into play, obviously it's going to have to be a lot more conversation, but we can provide them with the product they need at an affordable housing solution at a price that's going to work. Obviously, we got infrastructure that has to be handled. We have foundations that have to be handled. Water, sewer, electric, those things have to be addressed. But the first part about this is me letting the board know that we are available and we will help them. We're very, very busy. But like I said, I grew up in poverty. I didn't tell you this, but I grew up in poverty out in Orwell, Ohio, outhouses, wells, you know, crazy stuff. And if I can help some other human beings change their situation and better it, we're here to help. So if anyone has any questions, you can shoot them at me. I can answer every one of them right now.
Oh, we appreciate the input. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Anybody else? Well, thank you all. Appreciate it.
We We will move into information briefing items. The very first one we have is the history moment. As we have done for almost over a decade, Judy McKeegan is going to share some facts about some of the former commissioners.
It's former commissioners, by the
way. Actually, okay, I'm really short. Let's get this thing down. Heck with that. I think you can hear me if I do. Oh, dear. All right. I think we're good. Good morning, commissioners. I would like to say that Brian suggested this topic, and I thought it was really good in recognition of our newest commissioner to talk about some of the commissioners through the years. Now, as you can see from the picture up there, and if you count them, we've had 37 commissioners over our 106-year history, and I quickly found out that if I were going to do this topic real justice, it would be like a full-length movie or possibly a miniseries. But I'm not going to do that. So what I decided to do was to just kind of find some things to highlight. If I tried to talk about this particular commissioner or that particular, I'm going to leave somebody out or something out. So this is going to be a rather different from what I normally do up here. Normally, I have a lot of pictures and a lot of story to tell. This is going to be a little more disjointed than that, but I hope you'll enjoy some of the items that I have to share. This is, of course, our first board of commissioners. They are actually the three over on the right side of the picture, Louis Moses, Charles Miller, and Harry Farnsworth. And then they're there with J.B. Perkins, who we could talk about another time, who had land all over Cleveland that ended up in many different parts of our parks and the airport. And then, of course, the original two employees of the Metro Parks before Stinchcomb was an actual employee. That's Rex Heyer and Vernon Croft. But this is, I just thought, kind of a fun picture because it's one of the few that we have of this early group of people outside actually in the parks. And so I thought I'd share that to begin with. I'm not going to share pictures of every commissioner along the way. This was our first offices in the old courthouse built in 1860. That's the fourth courthouse built in Cleveland. And it was torn down in 1932. And so that's where we were. That's where the first board meeting. I have no pictures of the inside of it. Don't know what it looks like. But that's where we were until about 1929 or 1930 when we moved in to this fairly new building, which is the Standard Building. And I just happened to grab this picture because I thought it was a lot of fun. This was the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers, and this was their bank. That's why it was their Standard Bank. That's why it became known as the Standard Building. Of course, still is today. You can now have an apartment there. This may be a picture. As far as I know, I think by 1930, we were in the Standard Building. It's a little fuzzy. So this is the only inside picture I have of that. And that's Cyrus Eaton, Andrew Squire, and Warden Hayden, who were the commissioners at the time. And of course, Bill Stinchcomb there on the end. And then we moved, after many years in the Standard Building, briefly, we were over in the 55 Public Square, the old illuminating building it was known as, which, if you notice, was in the same spot that this building was. So we kind of moved over there and then back to the Standard Building, and then, of course, here to where we are sitting today. So back to the commissioners themselves. As I said, 37 of them over our 106-year time. One of the first things I wanted to find out was who lived on the east side, who lived on the west. Well, you can guess the east side is winning by a lot over there. So 26 commissioners on the east, from what I could find out. Now, some of them were born on the west side, moved to the east, and vice versa. But I just kind of went by where they were living when they were actual commissioners. So 26 east siders. As a young child who lived in Willoughby and then Lyndhurst until I was 10, but then moved to Avon, I kind of, you know, have dual citizenship. So I don't have a real fond, or I have very fond memories of both sides of the river. Occupations. All right, this is where it gets kind of fun. These are what some of the people, these are the one-offs. We have had one banker, one real estate who also owned a title company, one auto dealer, one gentleman who owned a book and periodical distributing company, one person in a construction company, literally construction company, one engineer, one accountant, one union president, and one gentleman who is described as an entrepreneur. He may or may not be sitting in this room right now, and I'm thinking that entrepreneur just begins to scratch the surface of what Mr. Moore does. So. But that's the way he's described in all the interviews and so forth.
Thank you.
So, two manufacturers, three industrialists, three developers, one of whom specialized in historic preservation. So I was very happy to see that. And of course, the most of our commissioners have been
Richard III.
19 lawyers.
19 lawyers.
I expected that from you, Rose. Thank you. Yeah. Now, when I gave you all of those occupations, again, it's scratching the surface. So many of our commissioners did so many different things. Several were in the military before in their younger years. Several were before, some that became lawyers were actually teachers. One was a social, what's that? one was a social worker. Of course, several of our commissioners have spent time as mayors of their communities. And so these are just the basic occupations.
How many have been in jail?
See, I told you I could do a whole thing on this. So, yeah. But so longest serving commissioners, David Whitehead, 18 years. Stephen Hazelwood back in the 30s, 40s and 50s, 19 years. And of course, Fred Redzepka, 23 years, our longest serving commissioner.
Wow.
Four commissioners have served over 10 years or more. Five, 11 years. I shouldn't say more, up to 10 years, five have served up to 11. Four commissioners, two of them sitting right here, served at least 13 years. So people tend to come here and stay a long time, which we appreciate. All right, some interesting kind of non-sequitur facts. Born outside of the United States, three. Cyrus Eaton, born in Canada. G. Stanley Mottershead, born in England. And Fred Redzepka, born in Poland. One commissioner, Charles Miller, never worked with an executive secretary, director, or CEO, because if you notice where he served till 21, he actually died the year that Stinchcomb actually became our first CEO director in 1921. Walter Kinder, shortest term served, not much of 1953, but there's a reason for that. At first, I thought maybe he passed away, and then I realized as I started looking, he became probate judge. So he went to the other side of the equation of working with the Metro Parks.
Dark side.
The dark side. Many hats. So I already talked about the fact that the commissioners had various occupations outside of their official one that ends up, you know, in the write-up about them in their CV. But the commissioners that we have had over the years have not only served as Park Board of Commissioners for Cleveland Metro Parks, many of them served in many other capacities, volunteer time again, trustees for colleges, for the library, for various civic groups. They spent time doing jobs with the city, with the county, with the state, with nonprofits. Many of our commissioners have done so much for the life of this community as a whole. And one just brief example, because I just thought it was fun when I came across this to the citizens of Cleveland. This is circa 1930. This is the way things used to be written in the newspaper. They used to expect people to read lots and lots of words. This is basically a plea for people to donate money and support the efforts to build Severance Hall. And the three commissioners that were on the board at the time, I think Andrew Squire, I can't read them from here, but there's three of them on there, along with many other peoples like, you know, Mr. Hannah and Mr. Halley and all of those movers and shakers of the early Cleveland that we now have that beautiful Severance Center. And that's just one example. And I picked it because I love this layout and also because I love music. As my 10-year-old grandson, who went there for the first time with his school a couple months ago, said, they played some songs I didn't really know, but they were pretty good. Like, Cleveland Orchestra is pretty good. So I think I speak for so many people in this area, because not only am I an employee of the Metro Parks, and I've had the privilege of being at board meetings for so many years and seeing some of the work up close, even just briefly, that you all do. I think everybody in this community benefits so much from the Metro Parks. I do when I'm not in my uniform and I'm out and just enjoying the park. So I know the hard work that goes into that and has gone into it for 106 years. So this is a thank you to the three of you here today and your predecessors for the past 100 years. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Judy. The next information item we have is the 2023 reservation plan updates. Kelly?
Thanks. Good morning. We're going to recap what was presented in September as a draft plan and talk a little bit about the community engagement today. All right. So, you know, just a brief recap of the planning that's taken place this year and the focus on Acacia, Euclid Creek, and North Chagrin. As we discussed, you know, the role of these plans is really to put our six core goals and our mission into action by identifying, you know, specific work that we take on in the parks. This year, we focused kind of in the northeast quadrant of Cuyahoga County. And I'm standing in front of you, but this really represents the work of about 30 people. It's great to draw on that expertise from all my colleagues. And then, you know, also take this out to the community to make sure that we're listening to ideas that the community may have. So as far as our engagement, we really circulated a lot of these flyers. We worked with our adjacent communities to help promote the events. We put signs out in the parks that I think was one of the more effective methods that we used to have people, you know, participate in the open houses. And then another component, we did go around and meet with elected officials and staff in our adjacent communities. So here's just briefly what we heard. Something that was kind of new to us, folks at Acacia talked about some conflicts between bicyclists and pedestrians on some of the trails. I'm happy to report staff has already moved to clear and open up some view lines so that there's more awareness, and we're working on kind of an education initiative using our trail ambassadors. Another element that came up during the planning process, the fence along Richmond Road, along the water feature there, staff is gearing up to remove that fence. We've determined it doesn't, thank you. Again, I shouldn't take credit for that, but yeah, I'm excited about that as well. We called out in the plan removing the former golf course gazebos. They're just a place where birds roost and do what birds will do, and have just become a maintenance issue and are not in great shape. The public was really interested in maintaining these gazebos, so what we determined is that staff will determine which structure is in the best condition, rehab that one, and that will remain, and we'll go ahead and remove the rest. We talked about some trail segments in accordance with kind of the initial plan. We didn't really initially plan to keep every single trail that was used as a cart path. And so we kind of finessed the trails that'll be removed based on some of the community input. And then we did hear people were very grateful for the restroom improvements that have been built in the south end of the park, but there was a request for additional restrooms. So we're going to kind of begin to look into that. So this is the plan itself. We'll be posting these online, and I provided a paper copy just so they're convenient. But these are kind of represent the update for this year. So moving on to Euclid Creek, we had a great crowd for the meeting for Euclid Creek. We held it in conjunction with a planning meeting for the Euclid Creek connector, you know, determining that route from the main portion of the reservation to the lakefront. So we really heard a lot of excitement from attendees about that proposed connection and the progress that's already been made. The changes on Highland Road with the new traffic light at the south end of Euclid Creek, people were pretty positive about that and how it's making it easier, especially for pedestrians to cross Highland. Talked again about those potential traffic and pedestrian and bicyclist conflicts.
So I have a question. Is if we can't go north on the west side of Highland and then go under that huge bridge where the creek is, because it seems like there's a lot of space. Is there a danger to that or cost? What are the impediments?
I believe that the challenge is not so much on the west side and getting beneath the creek, it's coming back up on the other side, where there's actually a structure there along the edge of the creek. That study kind of predates me, but I believe that's the challenge. We can always look into to see if that's a future opportunity.
I wonder, instead of at grade, it's always my hang up.
I think it would be, yeah, nicer along a waterway versus a 4-lane road. We can look into that and see if that's a future, future modification. No, I love the creative ideas and the awareness of the exact conditions. So one thing we're going to be looking at going forward, are there some traffic calming interventions we can do on Euclid Creek Parkway? And then people are just loving the Eastern Ledge Trail and hungry for more trail connections. So that's kind of a good motivation for us to continue making those links, especially on that east side of the park. And then an upgrade at the Highland Picnic area with a new restroom. I didn't put it on the list, but people are pretty excited too about the renovation of the old Highland Bridge.
Can I ask a question?
Definitely.
The Eastern Trail, a lot of people don't know about it. Or, am I, or has it been promoted? Okay.
There's always room for improvement, but I would say that, you know, in general, people have found that trail fairly efficiently. The My Mountain Trail down in Brecksville, I mean, the marketing team with the news media, I mean, literally the reports are very strong in those areas. So, yes, I mean, I think, you know, we've got the iconic ones of Rocky River, Fort Hill Stairs, Squire's Castle, Whips Ledges, and others. So we're trying to integrate a few more of these, like, unique trail experiences. And as we continue to go, I think you'll see more of that level of activity.
And then the upland area next to Donna Court, getting up into Richmond Heights, what are future plans for there? It seems like there's space that could be programmed and get people more. And then maybe even connect to South Euclid on the south end of that.
I'm going to try to find the graphic.
Yeah.
So that's on this portion of the map. You know, here's the Eastern Ledge Trail. Here's Donna Drive. I think that's
how it comes in off of Monticello and dead ends that street. Yeah.
When we kicked off the Eastern Ledge Trail project, we did have a community meeting, and while the residents, I believe that's Parkview, they enjoy their access to the park on kind of a bootleg trail. They were not open to formalizing that trail connection. Excuse me. You know, so maybe, but sometimes we see when people really realize what a trail connection brings to their community, sometimes attitudes change. So we can always revisit that.
Curious. Yeah.
And I think same with Donna Drive, there was some concern that trail connection itself would bring congestion, but it's functioned very nicely. The other thing, I think so, yes. And the other thing I'll point out, though, in the Donna Drive area, this symbol indicates hydric soils or wetlands, and so it may be challenging to really develop anything there, and that's why that stretch is a boardwalk. So it may just remain as is.
Thanks.
Great, yes, thank you. So, you know, just kind of moving on to North Chagrin, we didn't have quite the turnout at North Chagrin, but still some really good conversations. That kind of missing link to connect the park APT over with the Mayfield trails along Somme Center, a trail connection along Sunset was really enthusiastically received. Somebody in the during the meeting expressed concern that they had had an emergency situation in the park and weren't able to get mobile phone reception, and just brought that to our attention that that may be something we look at. And then it was interesting, folks walked into the meeting and some were concerned that we hadn't been making investments in North Chagrin, but then we were able to really, you know, rattle off, okay, Strawberry Pond, the new nature-based preschool, you know,
paved trail.
Exactly, exactly. So I think that park is so large, sometimes these continuous improvements and efforts aren't always noticed. So it's a nice, that's a nice dialogue to get to have with the community too. North Chagrin, hopefully folks have gotten a chance to see the new roof at Squire's Castle. Again, these improvements that just kind of keep coming, looking to some more improvements in that area. Whispering Woods, it was on our previous master plan, but that parking lot is being removed, and that's, you know, really in line with our natural resource conservation and very high value area.
I think to highlight too, we forget Manikiki is part of North Chagrin Reservation, right. And there's over $5 million worth of, I mean, so it, when, you know, park centric people, they don't always realize that there are other improvements in other parts of the areas. I mean, the old Hannah Clubhouse, that golf course had not seen a lot of any type of improvement. I mean, the maintenance facility was the worst overall rated in the entire park district. So, you know, improvements there were much needed, you know, for the long-term success of the property.
Yeah, that's great. And I think even the attention to the trails that have taken place, you know, a lot of these continual improvements are really exciting. That crosshatched area on the left is a major project by our natural resources team to do some wetland restoration and reconnections. We are looking at some, you know, future improvements at the Nature Center, and then, you know, just ongoing stewardship of the park.
Can you go back to that, two back, one more? The road along the eastern side of the Chagrin River there.
River Road?
Right along, along, I was looking at, well, you've got the dotted line starting down on the lower right.
Uh-huh.
So that is that property along there. Is that before you get to Mayfield Road?
Yes.
12
Yes.
But is that?
Yes. It's north of Wilson Mills. So, this trail along the river is just a great experience, and what we're proposing is to really expand that access in proximity to the river.
Yeah.
On our existing property.
Off of Rogers.
See that,
yes.
Yeah, I see that.
Just making sure.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's great.
Excellent. Yeah, and so as we continue south, you know, here's Wilson Mills. So we were kind of up in that area. So that really kind of concludes the 2023 work. I'm really gearing up for 2024 because there have been a lot of changes in property acquisitions at the
we've noticed.
Right, exactly. At the parks where we're going to be focused, but we're really looking at kind of that southeast quadrant of the county with South Chagrin, Bedford, Brecksville, and Hinckley. So looking forward to that process.
Thank you very much.
Again, you know, Kelly, on the entire, you know, team, all of the park managers, everybody that participates. I mean, again, you look back at the mission that stands with their protecting nature and connecting communities. You know, those two components, when we listen to, you know, all the different focus groups along the way, that continues to help shape how we're either looking at land acquisitions, preservation, or opportunities in the future. So the work that she's doing is so purposeful to continue to listen to what the community is asking. The very next info item we have is the 2023 year in review. Kelly, been a good year.
Thank you. So I think to bring the meeting to a close in the year, we historically have been doing year in review videos. So it's really just a look back. It's been quite an incredible year. Congratulations to Brian, the commissioners, the board, the entire team. Many feats from most recently today announcing that we've acquired over 25,000 acres now of protected land for Cleveland Metro Parks, the largest grant received on record, and many new amenities and trails opened up, including Susie's Bear Hollow down at the zoo. So it's really a look back to celebrate a lot of recognition and awards. And I want to send a special thank you to Eric Hewitt and Jeff Tolman for their work on the video in-house. Thank you. Thank you.
2023 was a transformational year across Cleveland Metro Parks as the 106-year-old Park District continued to implement strategic priorities from its second century of stewardship plan to protect nature, connect communities, and inspire conservation of our world. The Park District continued to protect land, water, and wildlife, adding vital spaces to improve the health of Northeast Ohio and enhance access to nature. Dynamic partnerships, grants, and generous donations helped more people connect with nature, elevated the guest experience, and set the stage for a more equitable, healthy, and connected region, including the largest private donation to Cleveland Metro Parks in its history to invest on Cleveland's east side. Partnerships also played a key role in the expansion of education and recreation programs that served hundreds of thousands of people of all ages and abilities, including a transformative project to create a new floating education center on Lake Erie. Was a special year at Cleveland Metro Park Zoo with the opening of the state-of-the-art Susie's Bear Hollow and the birth of several iconic animals, including a western lowland gorilla and two tiger cubs. The zoo reached audiences from around the world on Netflix's Baby Animal Cam, again surpassing over 1 million visitors thanks to special events, and set a new milestone for conservation. Support and service from within the organization, including Cleveland Metro Parks Police and Volunteer Services, help to protect and extend Cleveland Metro Parks' impact and legacy. Cleveland Metro Parks and its employees were recognized throughout the year, including the reaccreditation by CAPRA for continued excellence in parks and recreation management, as well as several national, regional, and local awards. As the year comes to the close, Cleveland Metro Parks has continued to prioritize its strategic second century of stewardship plan. Thanks to strong leadership and an organizational commitment to the mission and core goals, the foundation is set to continue to grow the park district, enhance equity and access, connect communities, and improve the quality of life for the region.
I want to thank our leadership team and our dedicated commissioners under the direction of Anthony J. Russo for a wonderful 106 years. There were so many milestones hit, including 25,000 acres. This community has a high expectation of Cleveland Metro Parks, and our staff lives up to that each and every day by providing high quality park amenities, serving a wide variety of diverse communities. This 106 years has been one of the best, and we look forward to an amazing 107th year. Always thankful of the commissioners and the community's support. It has been an amazing year. That does conclude the last info item for 2023. There is an executive session.
Is there a motion to go into executive session to discuss the purchase and acquisition of real property and also a specific personnel matters related to the appointment, employment, and promotion of employees?
Move to go into executive session.
Second.
Bruce Rinker.
Yes.
Yvette Itu.
Yes.
Dan Moore.
Yes.
And that concludes our business. You're welcome.
On est rentré. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
We need to make a motion to come out of executive session or just to adjourn?
Just to adjourn.
Okay, then I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor? Go in peace.
Aye.